ATL Echo presents He's Perfect by It's Phantasmagoria. Draco remembered everything. He wrote everything in his journals daily, with notes written in the margins. It was a compulsion he'd had since the war, when his anxiety peaked, and the Cruciatus curses leveled at him regularly left him with occasional minor memory loss. When he moved into 12 Grimald Place with Harry just months into their budding relationship, he said nothing about the trunk full of dated and organized journals Draco brought with him. It was because of the journals that Draco remembered every detail of his pregnancy. It was a surprise 2 years into their marriage, as neither of them had realized it could even happen. Draco was under the impression that only two pure-blooded wizards were capable of it, and Harry was under the impression that one needed a womb to get pregnant, no matter their blood status. He wrote about everything in a brand new journal Harry had given him for his birthday. He documented his cravings for Fortescue's cherry almond ice cream and noted the 2 times he ugly cried in public because they ran out of it. He wrote every night when the baby kept him awake as they tap danced on his bladder. There were pages and pages about his moments of anxiety and later panic and terror for the surgery he'd need to remove the baby from his magically grown womb. Mostly, he wrote about how excited they were to finally meet their child. His pregnancy was extremely routine, according to the hordes of books he read on the subject during the long 9 months of waiting and growing. The last thing on Draco's mind, when the time came to scoop the baby out of him and plop him, screaming and covered in slime, onto his chest, was that anything could be different about him. Scorpius James Malfoy Potter was a perfectly healthy, 10-fingered, 10-toed, blonde-haired baby boy. The first words out of Draco's mouth when he set his watery eyes on his squalling red infant was, "He's perfect. He's just so perfect, Harry. Look at him." It didn't take long for them to discern that there was something different about Scorpius. Draco noted down the day Harry first spoke his own concerns out loud, 6 months, nearly to the day, since Scorpius came home from St. Mungo's in a dragon-covered onesie. In the moments leading to Harry's confession, Scorpius sat in the middle of his blanket on the floor and refused to respond to Harry calling his name. He called again and again, and only after the 10th or 11th time did Scorpius flick his round, green eyes up at him for a split second before returning his focus to his toy dragon. The dragon was a gift from Scorpius's older cousin Teddy, who'd named it Stephen. Stephen was Scorpius's favorite thing, especially when Draco charmed it to move. Scorpius squealed as Stephen flapped its green, glittery wings and wiggled a haphazard circle around him. Scorpius had eyes for nothing but Stephen, which Harry wasn't entirely surprised by, considering Stephen was a much cooler toy than anything he ever remembered wanting as a child. "He loves Stephen more than me," said Harry, laughing while Scorpius batted his pudgy hands at the toy and squawked. Draco scoffed. "That's ridiculous. He loves you more than anyone else, including me, who carried his ungrateful little behind in my body for 9 months." He remembered to add a smile to his glare so Harry would know he was only joking. Mostly. Harry rolled his eyes. "He's never ignored me like that before, even for Stephen." Scorpius rolled to his side, kicking his feet and waving his arms at his dragon, and Harry smiled softly at him. "It might be nothing, but I can't lie and say it doesn't worry me." Draco nodded and said nothing as the first spark of concern simmered deep in his stomach. By 10 months old, he'd stopped making eye contact at all. Draco entered the kitchen one morning as Harry ducked low and shifted around in front of Scorpius while he sat in his high chair. He grabbed the cup of tea and plate of toast Harry had waiting for him under a stasis spell. He watched Harry for another moment before asking, "What are you doing?" Harry stood with a sigh and smoothed his hand over the soft blonde fuzz on Scorpius's head. "He won't make any eye contact at all, Draco. I think there's something going on with him." Draco watched their son line his banana slices along the edge of the high chair tray and said,
"Perhaps he's very focused."
Harry scrubbed a hand through his own dark hair. "He must be very focused all the time, then, because I haven't seen his eyes in weeks, going on months." Draco nodded and looked at the floor, where Scorpius now threw the slimier bits of banana that he'd apparently deemed unacceptable.
I suppose that is a concern.
He suddenly felt like there were 100 ping-pong balls bouncing around in his skull, and all outside noise became static. Later that night, he flipped back through the journal he started when Scorpius was born, and began marking every page that mentioned something out of the ordinary with neon green sticky notes. There were more instances than he'd thought there would be, and he worriedly chewed his lip until he tasted blood. Scorpius took his first steps at 14 months old. Not even a minute after those wobbling steps on unsteady baby legs, he began walking as if he'd been doing it for months. The pediatric healer he saw regularly for checkups didn't seem concerned that he waited a bit to walk. 14 months was still within the threshold for normal, the healer told them. 2 weeks later, he'd graduated to running. Another 3 weeks passed. They took Scorpius to Fortescue's for ice cream and found out he'd only eat it if it was warm, melted and soupy at the bottom of the cup it came in. There was a moment after they finished eating when Harry was cleaning up the mess at the table and Draco turned his head for just seconds to put something in his shoulder bag when Scorpius disappeared. Seconds became centuries as they both began frantically searching the crowd for him. It took only a couple of seconds for Harry to spot him and dash off, screaming his name. Draco thanked every last ancient wizard and witch he could think of that Scorpius's hair was so blonde, his wild curls could be spotted from space. It took Harry and Draco almost a minute to actually catch up with him, his chubby legs a blur. When they'd finally cornered him, he threw himself hard to the cobblestones and screamed so loud Draco's ears popped. Everyone within radius cringed in pain and stared at the spectacle. Heat prickled up Draco's neck as he and Harry apparated directly home halfway through their planned outing. "Well, he's a very smart boy. He was waiting to walk until he knew exactly what he was doing, so he would avoid all that falling down nonsense," said Narcissa, a week after the Diagon Alley incident. She sat with Lucius and Draco in the Manor Gardens, watching Harry chase 16-month-old Scorpius from one dangerous obstacle to another. "He must take after you, darling. You were always very clever, never wanting to disappoint us or yourself." He watched his husband and son with a tight smile on his face, as his gut churned. Draco knew that Scorpius should have said his first words by then. He should be babbling nonsense. He should be communicating, starting to reach his arms up to ask for hugs, or isolating his index finger to point. He didn't even say Dada or Papa, despite how often they repeated the syllables to him in hopes he would mimic them. Draco decided, against his better judgment, to tell his parents about their worries.
"We are actually a bit concerned about his development. He doesn't talk yet, and shows no interest in communicating with us."
Lucius scoffed.
"Why would you complain about that? Once he starts talking, you know he'll never stop. If he's anything like you were."
Narcissa opened her mouth, likely to chastise him, but Draco spoke first.
"We just think it's worrying he hasn't even said a single word yet, is all."
"Some children take longer. I don't see anything to worry about yet, darling. He's such a happy—"
She was cut off by a happy, extremely loud squeal as Harry scooped him up.
"He's a very happy child, and that's the important part."
Draco smiled as Harry brought Scorpius to the table, carrying him under his arm. Scorpius kicked his legs like a swimming frog, grunting with each kick.
"Has he worn himself out yet?"
Harry hitched Scorpius up higher as he continued to kick his little legs.
"More like he's worn me out."
He attempted to stuff Scorpius into the high chair Narcissa had transfigured from a birdbath, but Scorpius was having none of it. He screamed, his face turning purple. By the time he was in the chair and buckled, Draco wasn't quite sure if he was screaming because he was angry, or screaming to hear himself scream. Harry grimaced at Narcissa.
"He's got some lungs, yeah?"
Lucius relaxed from his recoil and removed his hands from his ears. Draco suppressed a laugh at how off balance his father looked.
"Does he scream like that often?"
Draco felt his face burn as his parents looked at him, both of them uncomfortable after Scorpius's piercing screams.
"It's becoming more common, yes,"
he said with a wince. His father straightened, his composure regained at last.
You must do something to put a stop to that. It's horrendous.
A muscle in Harry's jaw jumped, and Draco could practically hear his teeth groaning from the effort it took for him to keep his mouth shut. He turned to his father and plastered a flat smile on his face.
Noted, father.
When Scorpius was 21 months old and still hadn't spoken a word, Draco and Harry took him to his pediatric healer and told her all of their concerns. Draco brought his journal, filled with neon green sticky notes and annotated journal entries about their son from the moment he was born. Scorpius spent the entire appointment trying to open the door to the hallway when no one was looking, a cheeky grin on his face. Draco ended up sitting on the floor, tickling Scorpius every time he reached for the door handle. They explained that Scorpius's speech was limited to incoherent wailing and repeating noises on loop. He rarely made any eye contact. He didn't seem to understand what facial expressions meant, and his own were often flat and didn't quite match up to what he seemed to be trying to express. He lined his toys and snacks up and sorted them by size, shape, and color. He threw wild tantrums when those lineups were broken. He sometimes got overwhelmed by noises, or when he or others had intense emotions, and either flapped his hands frantically, spun in place, or let out a piercing scream. The healer listened, impatient, to their concerns. She pursed her lips, made notes, nodded, and said, "Mm-hmm," at all the right times. "Does he show affection?" she asked, when Draco finished reading off his lists. "Well, yes. He cuddles and hugs us and his family members regularly," said Harry.
"Does he initiate it? Is he okay with you initiating it?"
Harry looked at Draco and shrugged. Draco replied, "Both. He seems to enjoy hugs and contact from us most of the time, no matter who initiates."
Okay. So the main concern is that he doesn't speak yet. Boys sometimes take a bit longer to talk, but if you're still concerned, I'll refer you to my colleague, Healer Larson. He specializes in difficult cases such as these."
Draco bristled at her implying his son was difficult. Even if he sometimes was, Scorpius was his little star, and he was perfect the way he was, even if his occasional screaming made the thoughts in his head turn to painful screeching. Healer Larson was an older man, balding and pudgy around the middle, who had absolutely no rapport with children. He introduced himself to Harry and Draco as a pediatric healer with a focus on development and behavioral issues. He offered his hand to Scorpius for a high five and called him "young man." Scorpius ignored him in favor of inspecting Stephen's glass eyeballs. The healer bombarded them with questions that contained technical, medical, and developmental terms that slid right off the exhausted edges of Draco's comprehension. He patronized Draco when he tried to answer those questions, and Draco could tell that he only held himself back from doing the same with Harry by glancing at the old scar on his forehead every time he wanted to talk over him. Healer Larson ended the appointment by diagnosing Scorpius with developmental language disorder, which completely disregarded any of their concerns that weren't language-related. They left the appointment feeling more lost and more frustrated than they'd been going into it. Draco's fury over the entire experience boiled inside him, but Harry's seeped from him in waves. They operated home to Grimmauld with Scorpius spinning an anxious circle between them, humming to himself. It took two more healers and even a visit to a Muggle doctor before Harry finally suggested they ask Hermione. She knew all about their struggles with Scorpius's healers and had graciously, and likely with much effort, kept her mouth shut about it all. When finally asked about it, she jumped at the chance to reveal that she'd already done her research on it in the event they needed her help. She was an attentive godmother, after all.
"Neurodiversity is quite common, actually," she said, her eyes flicking to Draco. "Up to 15% of the population is neurodivergent."
"And you think he might be neurodivergent?" asked Draco.
Harry squeezed his hand under the table.
"Well, I'm not an expert in the field, nor am I his healer, so I can't diagnose him. But as a healer, I think I can say that I've seen signs of him possibly being on the autism spectrum."
Harry frowned. "Autism? You think so?"
"Yes. and I think it's worth seeing someone who will listen to you about it. Honestly, the healers you've seen should be absolutely ashamed to call themselves healers, she said with a sniff.
Draco felt his limbs go numb, while Hermione and Harry continued to talk. He'd only met one person that he knew of who was autistic, a distant cousin on his father's side when he was a child. The cousin came with his parents to Malfoy Manor for a gala celebrating his father's most recent contributions to St. Mungo's. His father had said some things about the boy that Draco later learned were not only mean-spirited, but extremely cruel. Draco remembered thinking the boy was maybe a little awkward and more interested in trains than anyone else he'd ever met, but he was funny and kind. He'd never seen the cousin again. He shivered as he imagined what his father would say if Scorpius was diagnosed with autism. They left their lunch with Hermione to pick Scorpius up from Andromeda's, where Teddy informed him that Scorpius ate an entire crayon. He also wouldn't tell them what color it was.
"It will be a surprise when he poops,"
he managed to say between gasping cackles. Scorpius spent the next 3 days howling about poop at every opportunity. Their last healer was recommended to them by Luna. Draco felt foolish for not thinking of asking her about it in the first place, considering she spent every weekday in a preschool with a gaggle of magical toddlers chasing her. As soon as he mentioned to her that they suspected Scorpius might be autistic, she grabbed her patchwork school bag and rifled through its depths before pulling out a colorful business card.
"Two of my students are autistic. This was the healer they both saw. She's quite lovely. Very good with children."
Draco took the card and turned it over and over in his hands.
"I feel like we've seen every healer in the UK at this point," he sighed. "I just want him to have the support he needs. Every healer and doctor we've seen has either denied that there's anything going on with him or has treated him like an invalid."
"Scorpius is brilliant, Draco. With or without the support of a healer, he has you and Harry. Not all children have parents and family who love and support them the way you two do."
She sipped her Genmai Cha rice tea, which Draco could smell from his seat across the table. He forced himself not to wrinkle his nose at the odor.
"Even if he is diagnosed with autism, we all know that he's still the same sweet Scorpius, with or without the label, and he's perfect the way he is."
He sat up straighter and lifted his chin proudly.
"He is."
Healer Cassie, she insisted on first names, met Scorpius a week later, and Draco was immediately comfortable with her. He could tell that Harry liked her as soon as they met her as well, if the way his usual tense stance relaxed when she introduced herself was any indicator. She was younger than the healers they'd seen up until then, and sported a bright pink streak in the fringe of her dark blonde hair and a wide smile. As soon as she finished introducing herself to Draco and Harry, she knelt down on the floor. Scorpius immediately climbed into her lap and began delicately examining the pink in her hair before she could get out more than,
"Hello, you must be Scorpius."
Draco started forward to help detach her hair from Scorpius's clammy hands. She ignored this in favor of grinning at Scorpius and asking him, without fishing for his eye contact,
"Oh, do you like the color pink? You let me know if you find split ends, okay?"
Scorpius cocked his head, listening to her cheerful voice.
"Pink,"
he said, looking at a lock of her hair intensely, a smile dimpling his plump cheeks.
"Yes, it is very pink, isn't it? Very good."
She turned her smile up to Harry and Draco, who were both wide-eyed watching Scorpius, and asked,
"So, what brings you to me today?"
Once again, they went through the list. Draco pulled out the well-creased parchment he'd condensed his neon-green notes and journal entries to after fumbling with the journal in front of Healer so many times. All of their concerns over the past few years since his birth were written down and occasionally added to. He scanned it as Harry recited it from memory. Healer Cassie listened, Scorpius still on her knee as she knelt on the floor, her brown eyes large and friendly and focused. When Harry finished, Draco nodded and put the folded list back in his pocket. His husband hadn't missed a thing, as practiced as they were saying it to all of the healers they'd seen. Healer Cassie nodded to Scorpius when Harry finished.
"Sounds like you're wired a little differently, little man. No shame in that."
Scorpius let go of her hair and hopped off her knee, then scampered over to the counter to reach for the jar of cotton balls. She stood and stretched her legs with a wince.
"So it seems like you may be looking at an autism diagnosis for little Scorpius here. I have lots of questions for you still to get a clearer picture, but you've answered a good bit of them already."
The surprise and relief of Harry's face matched his own. Harry took a deep breath, shot his fingers through the mess of his curls on the back of his head, and exhaled with a whoosh.
"Is it that easy?"
"Yeah, I'd say it's pretty clear. He shows a lot of classic signs of children on the autism spectrum. Do you mind if I cast a quick diagnostic for hearing problems to rule that out?"
"Of course, yes," said Draco, stunned.
He felt the prickle of frustration rising up his spine at how easy this had been. Why couldn't it have been this easy in the first place? She waved her wand at the jar of cotton balls Scorpius had his eye on. Three puffs popped out and danced around his head, then grew little legs and little faces. They bounced to the floor, bleating like tiny little sheep. Scorpius was thrilled, cackling and grabbing for them while they gleefully dodged him.
"Scorpius, I'm going to cast a little spell on you. It might tickle your ears for a moment, but it won't hurt."
She cast a gentle, blue diagnostic spell at him. It coalesced by his ears, swirled a few times, turned green, then disappeared. Scorpius slapped his hands over his ears and whined, but the cotton ball sheep continued to bleat and bounce and roll, and he forgot in seconds.
"Green, is that good?" asked Draco, biting his lip.
She looked up from where she was making a note in his chart.
"Oh, yes. No hearing deficiencies here. Let's jump into some questions. I'll try to keep it brief for Scorpius' sake, but we have a lot to get through."
The next half hour was spent answering Healer Cassie's questions, while her quill wrote everything in the notes tacked to her clipboard. At the end, she scanned through it and wrote one more note, tore it from the clipboard, and handed it to Harry.
"I will set you up for a full evaluation with me to figure out where he is on the spectrum right now. That has the information for therapy you can get him started on."
She scribbled a few more things into his chart before continuing, her voice gentle.
"While a diagnosis of autism doesn't change anything about who he is, there's nothing wrong with feeling a little overwhelmed by it as a parent. Our world is not designed with neurodivergence in mind, so a lot of the things we think are easy, or we take for granted, might be very difficult for him to navigate, which can be scary for him, and also scary for you both, considering his tendency to run off. This is why we have therapy to help him figure out how to navigate them and teach him how to be safe."
"What about his speech?"
asked Draco, his voice cracking. He already felt overwhelmed, and Scorpius was only diagnosed minutes ago. Harry must have noticed, because his hand slipped into Draco's, steadying him with a firm squeeze.
"He might get there in time, with encouragement. There are other ways to communicate as well, which you can work with a therapist to figure out. Things like sign language, to begin with."
She placed her clipboard on her desk and joined them in watching Scorpius play. Harry cleared his throat wetly. Draco tore his attention from Scorpius, who'd finally caught two of the three sheep, just in time to see Harry hurriedly rub his watering eyes.
"Yeah, that's... yeah, brilliant."
They left Healer Cassie's office with a folder full of information, pamphlets, and contact information, and an appointment for further evaluations. Scorpius left with three charmed cotton balls clamped in one hand. When they arrived at home, Draco struggled to keep it together for the next few hours before Scorpius went to bed. He felt like his thoughts were running over and around and through each other, so that he didn't even recognize his own inner monologue anymore. Harry was uncharacteristically quiet as he made them dinner, and later took Scorpius, Stephen, and the three cotton ball sheep to his bedroom. Draco stared at the wall to the right of the hearth, so unfocused on what he was looking at that the room began to distort around the antique Victorian wallpaper. He was shaken from the static of his thoughts by Harry, who sat heavily on the couch and slumped to his side, his head flopped in Draco's lap. Once he got over the sudden interruption, he tangled his long fingers in Harry's soft curls and absently scratched at his scalp.
"So," said Harry.
Draco hummed.
"So. It has been a day."
Harry slipped his hand into Draco's spare and laced their fingers.
"Are you disappointed?"
"Not disappointed,"
It's just a bit overwhelming, I suppose. You're being quiet, though. It's weird. He scoffed. How dare you? There is nothing weird about me being quiet. I'm always quiet. You're the one who never shuts up.
Harry grinned, dimples creasing his cheeks. Draco wanted to bite them.
If you say so, love.
Draco tugged his hair in warning.
I know where you sleep, Potter.
Malfoy Potter, came the expected mumbled reply, along with more dimples.
He rolled to his back and looked up at Draco, his brows creased.
You're thinking a lot. I can practically hear it.
Well, one of us should. It's not like you do much of it. Ow!
He flinched away from where Harry had pinched him in the side.
Unnecessary. Merlin, why do I even like you?
Harry became solemn. Because you love me, right? Or is it because I'm ruggedly handsome? Because I'm irresistibly charming?
Draco stared at him, unimpressed.
Oh, right. It's because of my cock.
Correct.
He wiggled away from Harry's pinching fingers, laughing.
You're the worst. Why are you like this?
Harry stopped trying to pinch him, looking very pleased with himself. Now that I've distracted you from your evening brood, what's on your mind? Draco smirked.
Besides your cock?
Harry grinned. Yes, besides that. That comes later. With a heaved sigh, Draco looked at the crackling fireplace and organized his tangled thoughts into a coherent sentence as best he could.
I'm relieved. We are on a path to getting the help we need for Scorpius. But I'm worried about him. Going forward, I mean. I'm scared of what this diagnosis will mean for him when he's in school, and how people will treat him.
There was silence for a long moment, both of them now watching the flames dance in the fireplace.
I worry too.
Harry reached for the hand not currently brushing through his hair and squeezed the thin, pale fingers firmly.
But I know we can handle this. And I know Scorpius can handle himself, not just because he's ours and is naturally amazing, but because he's extremely smart, all on his own. The diagnosis only opens up doors for him. It doesn't change who he is.
I know.
Are you worried about what our families will say? Because I'm confident that Andromeda, Ted's, and the Weasleys will feel no differently about him.
It's not them I'm worried about, Harry. You know exactly who I'm worried about.
Your parents love Scorpius, Draco.
Another squeeze to his hand.
I don't think it'll be so bad.
Draco smiled down at him.
I'm sure you're right.
He let the sweet smile linger as they stared at each other, then let it slip into a deviant grin.
So, about that cock of yours, which is apparently the only reason I keep you around.
Nice transition, love.
Harry stood up with a groan and pulled Draco up by the arms. He slapped his bum, eliciting a squawk from him.
To the bedroom with you.
Draco strutted with dramatic flair toward the stairs.
And they say romance is dead.
The next few weeks went quickly, establishing therapy schedules, having Scorpius evaluated officially, reading every available bit of modern research on autism. Draco continued to dread talking to his parents, especially his father. The memories of his distant cousin and his father's words about him made his stomach churn every time he thought about it. They told the Weasleys, along with Andromeda and Teddy, at the next Sunday dinner. There was a tidal wave of questions, many of them Draco and Harry had no answer for. Scorpius placed kernels of corn in a perfect line on his plate before eating them one at a time from left to right, singing to himself. Draco tried to loosen up and stop worrying about what would happen the next weekend when they would tell his parents. Surely, if everyone at the table could be so accepting and treat Scorpius no differently, his own parents could do the same for their own grandson. The very next weekend, Draco found himself sitting with his parents in the solarium of Malfoy Manor, drinking tea in tense silence. Scorpius grew bored of the standoff Draco had started and ran out of the room, Harry close behind, their cackles echoing through the halls. It felt all at once like a lifetime and mere days since they'd done the same thing in the gardens, when Draco had first voiced his concerns to his parents, and they'd waved them off as if he were worrying for nothing. In reality, it had been just over 2 years.
We took Scorpius to a healer,
he finally said, feeling anxiety crawling over his skin like ants. Lucius leveled a look at him.
Another one? Why do you insist on trying to find problems where there are none?
Lucius, let him speak,
said Narcissa, who Draco knew had noticed the trembling of his voice. Draco cleared his throat.
Yes, so we saw a healer, and they gave him a diagnosis and some things we can do to help him.
He paused, swallowed another sip of tea to wet his suddenly dry throat.
He was diagnosed with autism.
Harry and Scorpius burst into the room, laughing and winded from chasing each other through the halls of the manor, and probably giving the house elves headaches. Lucius ignored them, sneered, and shook his head in disbelief.
That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Malfoys are not... They do not get afflicted with... mental disorders.
Draco bristled, and felt Harry's furious magic tinge the air with the smell of ozone. He'd known this would be the reaction he got. He'd even mentally prepared himself for weeks beforehand.
It explains why he has trouble with social situations and communication, and the diagnosis opens up many paths to get him the services he needs to help him flourish and learn to communicate.
Lucius scoffed and turned his glare on Harry, who was letting Scorpius play with his disheveled hair to distract him from the argument brewing.
Whatever is wrong with him, it certainly didn't come from our side of the family.
There's nothing wrong with him, said Harry.
Draco could feel the burn of Harry's imminent explosion prickle his skin.
There's nothing wrong, and yet he was diagnosed with that. He's not a drooling idiot, Draco.
Draco flinched, remembering that phrase as one of the least bad things his father said about his distant cousin all those years ago. He prepared himself for worse.
Why did you need to push this? All he needs is discipline, which is something you are both too soft to give him.
Draco clenched his jaw, swallowing the litany of foul words he wanted to spew at his father, when Harry stood up from where he'd been crouched next to Scorpius.
Say another word, Lucius, and you won't see your precious future Malfoy heir ever again.
Draco wanted to kiss his seething husband, love burning right beside the vibrating mass of nervous rage.
Malfoy Potter,
he said under his breath, knowing Harry would hear him. Narcissa stood, finally having enough.
Lucius, enough!
Stop speaking before you say something you cannot apologize for. She placed a hand on Draco's shoulder.
Darling, are you sure that it's autism? It's just... he's so affectionate.
Of course, said Draco,
bewildered, feeling like the conversation was tumbling out of control along with his control over his nerves.
We've been searching for an answer for years now. This is what we've been hoping for, something we can help him with. And he's not alone, there's a whole community and support for him, and...
He could just be a little understimulated, seeing as you're both at home with him, and he doesn't get out often to see other children. He just needs to be around other children to learn how to act normal.
Harry interrupted.
Narcissa, with all due respect, please stop right there. We do not shelter him, and we know our son. We are sure.
She pressed her lips together in a thin line and sat back down.
Perhaps a second opinion would be prudent, is all I'm suggesting.
This was our second opinion. In fact, it was our fourth or fifth opinion, I think. I'd have to check my notes.
Draco's heart hammered against his ribs as he drained his tea and stood. He took a fortifying breath.
I suggest you both educate yourselves before expecting contact with us or your grandson in the near future.
Narcissa reached for his hand, missed when he pulled away.
Draco, darling, wait.
Lucius stood so fast, his chair toppled behind him, his fists clenched at his sides.
You can't keep our grandchild away from us. I will use whatever influence I have left,
which is none. Lucius, stay in your lane.
Harry, who'd scooped Scorpius into his arms and was doing his best to speak over his terrified howling, grabbed Draco's hand and pulled him close.
Let's go home, love. Give them time to think about this before they burn the bridge entirely.
With a loud crack, Harry apparated them to the main parlor, where he ushered them into the green flames of the flue before following them home. Draco used every last ounce of his willpower to keep his emotions in check until Scorpius finished screaming himself into a nap on the sofa. He then collapsed into Harry's arms and finally let himself cry. Days passed, then weeks,
then months. Draco stopped hoping for reconciliation after the 8 owls his mother sent in the first month. She urged him to reconsider, but never included a hint of an apology. He replied only once, right after the 8th owl, to tell her to stop contacting them until they were ready to apologize, or he would ward their home from further Malfoy owls, as they'd already blocked their flu for them. Scorpius spent the next 4 months leading up to his 4th birthday positively thriving. Through his speech therapy sessions, he'd learned to communicate with a mix of sign language, pointing at what he wanted in his book full of pictures, and even some verbal words. He learned everyone's names and said them as he pointed to them as a greeting, and sang along enthusiastically, even if his words weren't quite English, when they all sang happy birthday to him at his birthday party. Narcissa sent a gift in lieu of their presents, knowing they wouldn't be welcome. The gift was a colorful cube that popped up into a decked-out blanket fort with a simple, wandless incantation. It came complete with fairy lights that turned on and off when Scorpius clapped twice or dimmed low on a single clap. Harry conjured piles of pillows and blankets for the inside. The note attached called it the sensory tent, a sanctuary for relaxation after overstimulation. A surge of hope pulsed through Draco, knowing his mother only would have sent this if she'd done research and, on some level, was beginning to accept Scorpius's diagnosis. Teddy gave Scorpius another dragon to keep Stephen company. Scorpius named it Cheese, after his favorite food. When he was 4 years and 3 months old, he sat between Draco and Harry on the sofa, snuggled into them both, and said clearly and carefully, "I love you." Draco cried. Harry cried. Scorpius was at first alarmed by the tears, then pleased by the returned affection when both of them hugged him tightly between them. Scorpius, used to this type of display from them, shouted, "Scorp witch!" and shrieked with laughter. Draco wrote about it in his fresh journal and revisited the page every night when he'd finished writing his daily entry. Scorpius's love for his father's was apparent, but if that was the only time Scorpius ever said it out loud, Draco wanted to remember every second in detail. A week later, when Draco got the 9th owl from his mother, he felt the icy grip of his anxiety curl around him. After 7 months of complete silence from his parents, other than Scorpius's birthday gift, and 8 months since the argument at the manor, he'd expected his anger to fade. Despite the hope the birthday gift had given him, he was apprehensive. Harry suggested they read it together, which Draco knew was both to soothe his nerves and to make sure that if it was terrible, Draco wouldn't be able to incinerate it before Harry got to read it. "Dearest Draco and Harry, I hope this letter finds you both well. I know it has been many months since our last correspondence, which has pained us greatly. Your father and I have kept our distance at your request, and in this time, we have reevaluated our opinions on Scorpius and his diagnosis. We have spent the last 7 months learning about autism, which has opened our eyes to the outdated views we once harbored. Similarly to our mistakes of the past, we held opinions that were provably false. While not to the detriment of the entire wizarding world this time, they were harmful to you both, and most importantly to your son. We both regret speaking out of turn about our beloved grandson. Him being autistic changes nothing about who he is. We know this now. We also understand that it is none of our business how you decide to handle it. Please thank Luna for us again, for reaching out to us and helping to educate us. We've learned much about the lives of those with autism and the struggles of raising a child with autism in a world not equipped to receive them. We want to be there as a support for Scorpius, and to you both. We wish to meet with you both at your earliest convenience to apologize in person, and we would like to do the same with Scorpius. We hope to hear back from you soon. Give Scorpius our love. With all our love, Mother and Father." Draco read it twice before Harry began gently wiping the tears from his cheeks with his thumbs. "All right, love?" Draco batted his hands away. "Yes, I'm fine. Do you think they mean it?" Harry put an arm around his neck and pressed his lips to Draco's temple. "Well, there's one way to find out."
They agreed to meet without Scorpius for tea in the manor gardens. When they arrived, flanked by house elves carrying trays of tea and their lunch, Narcissa and Lucius stood from their seats.
"Draco, Harry, welcome," said Narcissa,
her calm facade cracking on the last syllable. They all sat around the garden table, sugaring their cups of tea as they settled into the silent awkwardness of the moment. Lucius, surprising everyone, was the first to speak.
"I believe we, and especially I, owe you both an apology."
He laced his fingers together in front of him and lifted his chin.
"I was mistaken about my beliefs on the matter of Scorpius and his diagnosis. I apologize to you both, and I will apologize to Scorpius as well, if you will allow it."
A beat of silence passed before Harry cracked.
"That was painful for you, wasn't it?"
He stopped and hissed,
"Ow, Draco, what the hell?"
Draco withdrew his hand from Harry's side, where he was sure to have left a bruise from the pinch he'd just given him.
"What Harry means to say is that we tentatively accept your apology."
Harry bumped his knee against Draco's.
"We wanted to talk with you first before bringing him," he said, looking at Lucius with a hard look before sighing. "I'll collect him from Andromeda's once we finish lunch, so you can apologize to him as well."
Narcissa's face crumbled, and she covered it with her delicate hands. She composed herself and smiled at him.
"We would love that. We miss him terribly."
"He misses you, too. He was also quite pleased with the birthday gift."
Draco took a deep breath to clear the last of the buzzing beneath his skin. His mother beamed at him. Lucius made a face like he was swallowing something far more unpleasant than his pride.
"Yes, well, now that that is finished, we should eat lunch. Breen, if you would please."
The elf, who'd been standing by with their lunch tray, awkwardly waiting for the conversation to end, eagerly placed the tray on the table before disappearing. An hour later, Harry flew to Andromeda's and reappeared shortly after with Scorpius in tow, Stephen and Cheese clutched tightly to his chest.
"Scorpius, you remember Grandmother and Grandfather? Say hello."
Scorpius didn't make eye contact with any of them, except fleeting glances, as though he couldn't decide where to rest his eyes unless they were trained on Stephen or Cheese. He then pointed to Narcissa and said,
"Nan, mum."
Then pointed to Lucius and said,
"Nampa."
"Yes, very good, little star," said Draco, grinning down at him.
Scorpius grinned, giggled, and spun in a little circle between them all, his glee contagious. Lucius huffed, amused.
"His pronunciation needs a little work, but I suppose I can live with being called Nanpa."
"He said our names," said Narcissa in wonder. "I remember the last time we saw him, he barely spoke at all. How wonderful!"
Narcissa bumped her shoulder to Lucius, who nodded tersely to her, and waited until Scorpius stopped spinning. As he pressed his face between his two dragons, Lucius addressed him.
"Scorpius, we owe you an apology. We are sorry for being rude to you and for not seeing you for so long. We won't be doing either again."
Draco watched their son grow still and silent, a sign he was absorbing his grandfather's words, processing it. He soon began spinning again, apparently deciding he was okay and was now bored with the conversation.
"Papa, Disket?"
Lucius spent a moment baffled and blinking before Draco replied,
"Didn't you just eat at Auntie Andy's? You're going to turn into a biscuit at this rate, little star."
Narcissa looked at Harry and mouthed,
"Disket?"
around a spreading grin. He nodded, his own grin dimpling his cheeks. She turned to Scorpius and said,
"Nan Mum has your very favorite biscuits in the kitchen, darling. Shall we go find them together?" "Nan Mum want disket,"
said Scorpius, following Narcissa into the manor. The three men followed behind silently, tense but charmed by Scorpius and his tenuous grasp of how to pronounce biscuit. Once inside, and only after Scorpius was supplied with a wide variety of biscuits, after Narcissa waved Draco off, worrying about the dizzying amount of sugar with,
"It's my job as Nan Mum to spoil him, Draco,"
followed by an inelegant snort from Lucius, they sat in the solarium where the fight began months ago.
"Scorpius obviously has come a long way with communication," said Lucius,
watching Scorpius pretend to feed his dragons from his plate.
Shall Nan-Mom ask Breen to fetch you your sensory fort, Scorpius darling? We have one for when you visit us, just like the one you have at home, said Narcissa, paying no attention to the men beside her. Breen appeared, making Scorpius jump and scream, which turned into breathless giggles at the size of Breen's large, goggled eyes. Please bring us Scorpius's fort. While she and Scorpius busied themselves setting up his fort, Lucius sat down at the table set nearby. Harry left to join Narcissa and Scorpius in the fort, while Draco stiffly sat by his father.
He's extremely smart, father. He picks up on things very easily. He can already count to 30 and sing the entire alphabet, knows all of his colors and shapes.
Lucius nodded.
I don't doubt that he's intelligent, Draco. He is your son, after all.
Draco, appeased by the acceptance, relaxed in his chair.
He makes us proud every day.
There was a heavy sigh beside him.
Now, don't take this the wrong way, because I do not mean to offend Scorpius, Lucius began,
his words uncharacteristically hesitant.
Do you ever wish Scorpius were not autistic, if only to make his life easier?
Draco shook his head.
No, he wouldn't be Scorpius if he wasn't. It's a part of him.
He smiled sadly.
I do wish I could make things easier for him, though. You do make things easier for him. I like to believe that we, as parents, would do anything to make our children's lives easier. Sometimes we fail.
He looked at Draco's left arm, covered by his sleeve.
But we never stop trying.
They were both quiet for a moment, before Lucius reached out and put a firm hand on Draco's shoulder.
You are both good parents, Draco. You love him as he is. You protect him from people who would hurt him, even if it's hard to. Even if those people are us. I wish I had had that kind of fortitude when it came to you, back then.
Draco didn't have time to reply, as Narcissa was approaching them with a grin on her face that made her look 20 years younger. Harry and Scorpius followed behind.
Nanpa, want biscuits?
We can work on his pronunciation if he'd rather he call you Grandpa, said Harry. Narcissa stopped in front of them.
He can call me Nan-Mum forever, as far as I'm concerned. I love it.
She held a hand out to Lucius, just as Harry and Scorpius appeared behind her.
Come, Lucius. Scorpius is having us for tea in his fort.
He didn't hesitate to take her hand and stand up.
Well, little Master Malfoy, show us the way.
Scorpius stuck his little chin out, a spitting image of Draco as a child, and huffed,
Malfoy Potter.
Draco's smile turned smug. Harry cackled, and a very proud Scorpius led his sputtering grandparents into his fort for pretend tea and real biscuits with Stephen and cheese.
8th October 2007. Today, after what feels like chasing it for my entire life, I have gotten my father's approval on something good. We reconciled about their reactions to Scorpius, and not only did we get an apology from my father, but he told me he was proud of me for how we're raising Scorpius. I'm not sure how to feel about it yet, but something far more important happened just afterwards. Scorpius corrected him. He said, Malfoy Potter, to my father, whom he called Nanpa and dragged to a tea party in his tent. I think I've finally lost the plot, because instead of caring that my father is finally proud of me for something good, I'm just so utterly obsessed with and proud of my son, who must have gotten his brass balls from Harry, and how he corrected my father to his face. My father, who said nothing while my mother made him eat biscuits with her and Scorpius, in a tent. Lucius Malfoy in a tent. I'm laughing so hard I can barely write. Things Scorpius said today. Nan-Mum, Grandma. Nanpa, Grandpa. Malfoy Potter, Malfoy Potter. Asked for more biscuits and a drink with his sign language. Please. My mother tried teaching him some polite manners. We'll see if it sticks. Overall, a good day. Note, added in the margins at 3 a.m. Lucius Malfoy in a tent.
ETL Echo. Echoing tales for everyone to love.